Okay, so I just want to welcome you to the four column inventory workshop. My name is Gabrielle. I'm a compulsive eater. Hi, everyone. And so what we're going to be doing in this workshop is we're going to be going through the four column inventory as it's written in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So this workshop really has no opinion, nothing about our CEA how 170 questions. That's a thing that we do for our steps, you know, to become an inventory sponsor. But this is really about how we do the four column inventory as the Big Book lays out as a tool for dealing with our resentments. So I just want to start out just by letting you know that I'm a compulsive eater. I have been abstinent since May 22nd, 1998. I'm maintaining a 27-pound weight loss, and I'm a food inventory step name and maintenance sponsor. And I've been coming to house since 1996. So I have a lot of experience with resentments. So anyway, so I want to tell you why this process is important to me. Hi, if you just take a handout from the back. So I just want to tell you a little bit about my story with this subject in particular. So, but really my big aha moment with this four column inventory happened. I was already in HAL. I had done my inventory in HAL, and I was in a relationship. And, you know, and not to give you my whole pitch or everything, but, you know, really my MO in my life was that, you know, I'm a victim. Like, you know, daddy didn't love me. My career isn't going good enough because I'm too heavy. You know, whatever it was, I really didn't take a whole lot of responsibility. And that was changing as I was doing the steps, but I'd always like... I always still felt like I was a victim of circumstance in a lot of ways. So what had happened was I was in a relationship and with the man who is now my husband, and I was very, very, very ambitious. And we were at a party, and I had this girlfriend who was also in the same line of work that I was in. And my boyfriend, now husband at the time, we had made a date that we were going to go to this party and then we were going to, you know, go home and, you know, have a nice evening together. Well, she says to me, hey, listen, there is a big party with these people you have got to meet. And so why don't you come with me to the thing and we'll just, you know, and I said, oh, yeah. Because, of course, my God at that time was not a higher power of a spiritual thing. It was, money, property, and prestige. So I had to go and, you know, I had to go with her. I had to go to this party, right? Because this was going to make me. And this was going to make my career. And so so I say to my boyfriend, I say, hey, listen, I'm just going to go with her. And so I'll just see you. I'll see you later at home. And he's like, what? You're doing what? I go, I'm going to, you know, I mean, it's not a big deal. And, you know, and of course we end up getting in a huge fight. He's like, we had a plan, like you're flaking on me, da, 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 da. We get in a huge fight. I don't go to the party with her. We fight all night. It's a big nightmare, right? So the next morning, I call a fellow in the program. And of course, you know, and I was also had a flair for the dramatic. So I stomped out of the apartment and, you know, and this is before cell phones. And I go to the nearest payphone and I call her and I'm like, you will not believe what he is doing. And he's trying to keep me down. And I mean, I think I brought up like, you know, 400 years of oppression. I probably brought up the suffragettes, you know, I mean, the men, male dominated society. And she goes, do you have a paper and a pencil? And I said, yes. And she said, great. I want you to do a four column inventory and call me back. Click. I was like, what? Okay. Well, I had no place else to go because I had already stomped out on him. And so I sat there at this gas station. The gas station is still there. And thank you. And I started writing. And I wrote the four columns as, you know, as you see. And I knew a little bit about them. I knew enough about them, right? And so I wrote down resentful at him, you know, cause. He's always keeping me down. He didn't want me. He doesn't want me to be successful. You know, he, right? Finger pointing. And affects my, you know, self-esteem, security, personal relations, sex relations, ambitions. It affects all of it, right? He is keeping me down. And so my part. Yeah, that's not really important. So I call her back and we start going through it. And I start saying what I just said to you. I'm resentful at him. He's always keeping me down. He doesn't want me to be successful. He wants to keep me small, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and we get to my part. She goes, so what do you think your part is? I said, I don't know. Because you know what? He really wants to keep me, blah, blah, blah. And I go back to, you know, the cause, right? I go back into that. And she goes, did you tell him about the party? I go, no. She goes, okay. So that is dishonest. I go, well, it's not really dishonest. I didn't know about it at first. And, you know, and so I didn't really know. And she goes, did you tell him your plan? And I said, no. She goes, that's dishonest. That's lying. So you're a liar. Write that down. And like, so it went, you know, and for the first time, what I really got was I got someone who was really shooting straight with me. There was nothing about like, daddy didn't love me enough, like poor me, I come from an alcoholic home. It was none of that. It was, I'm dishonest and I'm a liar. You know, it was things like I'm self-seeking. I want that career and I want that money more than I want to be intimate with my partner, you know, and I'm selfish. I didn't think of his feelings. I didn't think of his plan for the evening. I didn't think of him at all. I just thought of myself. And she really helped me lay it out and like get very clear. And I'll tell you, the gift that I got from that was that that last column really gave me a strength that I never felt I had. I always understood that thing when they said lack of power, that was our dilemma. That's right. That's why I had to eat all that sugar, because it made me so much better and made me do things faster, you know? And that's why I had to exercise all the time, you know? And that's why I had to do all of these compulsive things, because lack of power is my dilemma. And I need to, you know, without a spiritual program, I need to change the outside so that the inside can feel powerful, right? And we know that where that leads me is I end up in a 12-step program for compulsive eating, you know, thank God. So anyway, so that is, you know, that's my experience with it. And that has continued to go on. I've continued to use the four column inventory to really get honest with myself. And so I would say, if you are ready, willing, and able to be honest, open-minded, and willing to look at yourself and see the part that I'll just speak for myself, the part that I play in my uncomfortability, then I really think that the four column inventory is an amazing tool. It was a total game changer in my life. And, you know, and I really believe that as a result, you know, that relationship flourished as a result of me really starting to take responsibility for myself and my actions. That relationship flourished. We got married. We have children. And it's certainly not perfect. You know, I was talking to him this morning and he goes, so what's your workshop on? And I go, the four column inventory. He goes, oh, that's good, because you have a lot of resentments. I'm like, that's right, because I've been married to you. And but no, we're very jovial like that. So anyway, and so I'd like to take a moment, because I just kind of like rushed into this. I'd like to take a moment for all of us to just take a second, center ourselves, and close your eyes. And just ask the God of your understanding to come in to your heart and your mind and your body, and to that you be open and willing and honest and open to receiving whatever you will be revealed in this four column inventory. And let's just say the serenity prayer together. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. So when we do this, of course, I'm just taking for granted that we have in some way, shape, or form done the first, second, and third steps, that you've come, that you've admitted that you're powerless over food and your life is unmanageable, that you've come to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity, and that you've made a decision to turn your will and the care of your life over to God. To that God of understanding. And like I said, for those of you who just came in, this workshop is in no way to take away from our 170 question inventory. This is merely to have us do a working workshop through the four column inventory as it's written in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So what I want us to do next is I want us to read. And I'll also say, you know, I've been in 12 steps since 1991, and it really wasn't until I got into Howe in 1996 that I actually read the big book. So make of that what you will. So anyway, I really think our program is wonderful because it forces us to read the text. So we're going to start going around, and before we actually get into the pen to paper work, we're going to read what it says in the book. That's always a good thing to do. Read the instructions. So why don't we each take a paragraph, and I'll start. We're going to start on page 64, where it says, this was step four. And it says, and then we'll just start, and Pat will go next, and then we'll just weave our way through the aisles there. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. Oh, and just to let you know, this is Xerox. This is very, I am not high tech. I couldn't pull it together for the high tech. So, and I just kind of figured this is actually from my big book. And so you get all of, you know, you'll learn a lot about me from what's highlighted. And also, I thought it was really great because to be honest, I don't do this on an Excel spreadsheet. I put pen to paper. And that's, to me, what an amazing, there's something magical that happens between my head, my heart, and my hand, you know, when I really get that stuff out. So, okay. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsalable goods, to get rid of them properly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values.
We did exactly the same thing with our line. First, we searched out the flaws within our makeup, which caused the failure. Beginning convinced that self-defeated or valued ways was what had defeated us, we considered it a common manifestation.
Resentment is the number one offender. More alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentment, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up.
On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our enemies, whether our self-esteem, our security, our ambition, our personal or sex relationships, which had been interfered.
And why don't you just read those columns across horizontally?
Just a question.
Yeah.
So is the grudge list that first column then?
We're going to go through all of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We were usually as defined as this example. I am resentful at Mr. Brown that caused his attention to my wife. Affects me sexual relationship, self-esteem, fear. The cause told my wife of my mistress, sex relationship, self-esteem. Brown may get my job at the office, security, self-esteem. Mr. Jones, she's nuts.
Snubbed.
Thank you. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend. She's gossip. Personal relationship, self-esteem, fear. My employer, unreasonable, unjust, overbearing, threats to fire me for drinking and paddling my expense account. Self-esteem, fear, security. My wife misunderstands and nags, likes Browns, wants a house put in her name. Pride, personal self relationship, sex relationships, security, fear.
We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever thought. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us, and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph.
It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we commit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. With such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again, and with us, to drink is to die.
If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its peoples really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered. But how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol.
This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we truly grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done."
We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where have we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight.
Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding threat. This fabric of our existence is shot through. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt. But we did not, ourselves, set the ball rolling. Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed as stealing. It seems to cause more trouble.
Self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. trusting and relying upon God. We trust indefinite, is that the right word?
Infinite.
God rather than selfless. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as He thinks. As we do, He would have us. He would have us. And how we rely on God. Does He enable us to match humanity with serenity?
We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commit.
Okay, so that's where we're going to stop, because what starts next is the sex inventory, and what really started at the top of page 68 was the fear inventory, and if we have time, we'll get to those, but I really want us to start to focus on just the four column, the resentful part. So on the next page, you'll see that we have a little worksheet that we're going to go to in a second. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give an example of... like I said, you know, I've been in recovery for a while, so I'm a pretty resentful person. but I work on it, and this has been the key for me. So what I'm going to try and do, and again, this is my experience that was like passed down. There is, to my knowledge, there's no one way to do this. This is the way that has helped me. So what we write, what I start with in that first column is I start with what I'm resentful at. And what could these things be? They're people, places, things, institutions, ideas, principles, anything with whom you are angry, that you resent, or you feel hurt or threatened by. So I'm just going to give you a example. Okay. So, I, the other day, had a resentment against, we'll call her Ms. X, because it's anonymous. The cause. Okay. So, and when you really get into this, I mean, this can be your job. I mean, it doesn't have to just be a person. It can be the religion you were born with. It can be, you know, society's take on, you know, on you, your gender, your you know, whatever it is. But for today, we're going to start simple. We're going to start with Mrs. X. Ms. X. Okay, the cause. So to me, the cause is the story. And you guys, I think you can understand, you know, how we like to tell the story. I mean, maybe you don't, but I do. I want to get into the story, and I want to tell my sponsor, and I want her on my side, and I want her, you know, I am going to tell her the story. And so I think of the story as like you're sitting down with your person, whoever your person is, your, you know, your good friend, your sponsor, your mom, whoever, and you're going to tell them the story. And so here's the story, you know. Mrs. X, let me tell you, Mrs. X, she always invites her kid to other people's houses and asks if they can sleep over. Well, this has been going on for years. And, you know, and so I hadn't heard from her for a year, and she tells me, oh, my darling is coming to camp for 3 days, and he would love to see your little darling. And, oh, by the way, can he sleep over? And da 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 da. Okay, so. That's part of my story. I'm just giving you, like, the fingernail, right? Okay, so here we go. And now I'm just irritated. So the cause. Wants kid to sleep over. Asks me, to take care of her kid. Now, the subtext of this is all, doesn't she know how busy I am? Like, doesn't she know I'm doing a four-column inventory workshop at the CEA Hal Global Convention? I have stuff to do. blah. Okay? Can we just, can I, okay. For time's sake, let's just write blah, blah, blah. But I am telling you, this is a real thing in my life, and I realize I have been resenting this woman. Now, these boys are 13. I've been resenting her since they were 6, okay? For this behavior, okay? Okay, so there's my story, right? And here's what I like to do. Now, other people will say to write all of your resentments out here, then write all your resentments out here. This is the way I do it. I write my resentment at Ms. X, and then I get it all out. And I write and I write and I write the story until there ain't nothing more in me to write. Until now, I'm just repeating myself, you know, and then I'm like, okay, I can stop. But, you know, sometimes we got to do that, and then hopefully our sponsor will say, you told me that already. You're repeating yourself. So so then we move on. So now I've gotten it all out, right? And I haven't even gotten it out for all you people. But anyway. Okay. So then, but we get specific, and it's almost like I like to think of it as like it's a tub, a full tub of water, and I'm just going to let all that stuff drain out onto the page. So I write and write and write and write and write. I tell the story, I get all those resentments down until there's no water left in the tub. Okay. Affects my. Okay, so what the big book tells us, it gives us a list of options here. Okay? It says, on page 65, it says, on our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem? And was it our security, our ambitions, our personal sex relations that were interfered with? Now, again, this is the way I do it. Some people put in pocketbook, some people put in other things, but this is how I was taught to do it. So we have to ask ourselves, well, what do they mean by that? You know, I don't know what they meant. They wrote this in, you know, whatever, 1939. So self-esteem, this is what I've kind of gleaned from other writings. Self-esteem is what I think of myself, right? Security. It's feeling safe. It's financial security. So now we're getting into money, right? And it's how I feel secure in the world, you know, whatever that might be mean to you. Ambition. Ambition, or a lot of time, ambition has to do with my work. It has to do with my career. It has to do even sometimes with family, you know? Personal relations, our relationships with other people, you know, and this can mean, you know, anyone from the person who's checking me through at the grocery store, that's a personal relationship, to, you know, all the people I live with, my nearest and dearest. And then sex relations are really, you know, I would say depending on, you know, how, where you are in your sexual life, it's the drive for sexual intimacy, it's partners, it's spouses, it's maybe people you want to have sex with. You know, it's basically personal relations to me are almost everyone besides the person I'm having sex with, you know, or the person I'm trying to think want to make me, you know, that I'm trying to mind trip into thinking I'm sexy. Anyway, that was a different time. Okay, so back to my list. Okay, so back to my list, back to Ms. X. So the cause affects my, it affects my self-esteem. Why? Because I don't feel good about myself. Because I have this resentment. Because here's this cute little kid who's in my house, and I hate his mother. Because she asked if he could sleep over, right? It affects my security. You guys don't all know my backstory in my life, but I'm in school. I'm coming to this program. I have two other kids. I don't want other kids at my house if I can't be there, you know, because the babysitter is in charge, and that doesn't make me feel as safe. And so I'm not feeling safe. My security is affected. My personal relations are affected. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry. So my personal relationships are affected because I kind of feel weird around the kid. I kind of feel weird around my kid. Like, I don't really want this kid here because his mom has, you know, crossed some boundary in my mind. And do you see? It's just all verklempt. You know, it's like all like mucky now. And I would say even I could go as far as saying my sexual relations are affected because now I'm irritable with my husband and he is my, you know, he's my sexual partner. Okay. Now we get to the kicker. Okay. Now we get to what I consider the gold. Okay. Because this is the stuff, because if I go through life and I'm mad at Mrs. X, she does this to me, you know, everybody does this to me. Doesn't everybody know how busy I am? Wah, wah, wah. It's poor me, poor me, poor me. An iced tea with sugar in it. You know what I mean? It's like, it is, it so leads me to the bite. Because if I'm always in the poor me victim role, I gotta fix that. That is such an uncomfortable feeling that I will end up taking an extra bite, not leveling off the cup, whatever it is to get mine to take care of that yucky feeling that I have because I have a resentment. Okay, so my part. So I go back to the big book because see, I'm really good at the story. Like I could have gone on with the story for you guys forever, but I want to get concise. Because that's, remember when I told you about the story with my girlfriend, you know, on the phone, on the payphone, she helped me get concise, you know? And so that's what the big book says. So let's see where it says, page 64, 65. Okay. So on page 69, oh no, that's we're into the sex inventory now. I'm trying to see where it says the actual words. Oh, here it is. On page 67, on the third paragraph, it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Okay. So what do those things mean? This is the best I can make of it over the years. Selfish. I'm thinking of myself. I'm making it all about me, you know? And sometimes I have to put these things in my own words, and then I need the help of a sponsor to distill it down, right? So a lot of times I can see that my behavior is making it all about me. Mm-hmm. I'm writing making it all about me. And what is that? It's selfish. Okay. I'm not thinking of my kid and that he might have fun with this other boy. I'm definitely not thinking of this woman in any loving or kind way. I'm only thinking about myself. Dishonest. So what is dishonesty? You know, the gift that I got from that story was dishonesty is a half-truth. It's a lying by omission. And for a big one for me, I people please. Because I will say, sure, I'll do that, when I really mean, I don't really want to do that, but I want you to like me, you know? And so I have to remember that when I people please, you know, who ends up with the resentment? Me. And then usually what happens is I talk to my sponsor and she says, you have to go back and tell that person you can't do that. And then I have to go back and tell that person I can't do that. And they're like, well, geez, now I have to get someone else to do it. And they're pissed, you know? So my dishonesty gets me in trouble. Self-seeking. Self-seeking and selfish, I think it's a process for us to figure out how that is different for us. Self-seeking for me is all about fear that I'm not going to get what I want or lose what I've got. You know, it's that thing that it's like, I got to get mine. You know, where's mine? Who's going to, you know, where's mine? She keeps asking for me to help with her kid. Where's mine? Who's going to help me with my kid? Okay, the big book says that another one is frightened. Okay, for me, I'm frightened about everything. I wake up in fear. So that doesn't help me get specific. But what I do know is that I am controlling. And what's at the bottom of being controlling? Fear. Most of these things, and that's why they talk about fear is bracketed next to all of my parts, because at the basis of all of these things is fear. But if we, for me, if I just keep writing fear, fear, fear as my part, you know what? I kind of let myself off the hook. I'm like, I'm so fearful. It's such a hard world. It's so scary, you know? And then I don't really have to take, because it is, it's a scary, scary world. But then I never have to take any responsibility. But if I look at that, I'm controlling. I am controlling. I like things the way I like them. I don't like change. I don't like new people to be in my house if I'm not there, even though they're a lovely, charming little 13-year-old boy who wouldn't hurt a fly. I want to control the environment so I feel secure, you know? Okay. And also, a lot of times when I look at my part and it's like, well, and I didn't do this, but let's just say I flew off the handle and I came home and I yelled at everyone and I told them to clean up because there are too many kids here and blah, blah, blah. Usually I fly off the handle and yell at people because I'm in fear. I'm in some kind of fear, you know? And okay, I would also add, not to rewrite the big book, but here's another one that I find a lot for myself is that my part, I have expectations. And this is a big one for me. I, like I said, this woman has been the same way since 2007. Why do I keep expecting her to be different? She has not shown me any evidence that she is ever going to change. You know, she has been asking me to do this since 2007. Now, sometimes I say yes, sometimes I say no. But her behavior isn't changing. Why do I keep expecting that it's going to change? Expectation leads to resentment. Have you ever heard? And expectation is a planned resentment. So when the same woman who taught me, who kind of gave me the gift of the four step, she had a child the same time I did, and he would hear her on the phone saying these things, and he grew up and he said, expectations are planted resentments. That's a good one too, right? Okay, so an expectation to me is really dishonesty with myself. It's really expecting that this person is going to be any different than they've ever shown me to be. You know, it's that thing of like, I think there's a line in one of our books that says, never mind. I just lost my train of thought. Okay. So, let's see. So this is a pretty good, and I would also say, I have to go back to the story for just a second. So then the second day this kid is at my house, she texts me and says, he's just having such a great time. Can he sleep over again tonight? He really wants to. And now my impulse is to copy the text and forward it to my other girlfriend who she does this to. But I say no, because I am about to do a 4-column inventory workshop at the CEA HOW Global Convention. I can't do that. I sit there and I call my sponsor instead and I start to go into the story. And she goes, you know, you can just text her and say, I'm sorry, it's not going to work out. You don't even have to say, I'm sorry, it's not going to work out. You can just text her and say, no, not today. He was a great house guest. And that's what I did. I said, it's not going to work out for us. He is such a sweetheart. And she responded, oh, he loves you guys! Exclamation point. She doesn't care. She doesn't know that I've been doing a 4-column inventory on her. Now, had I gone to my son and said, do you want him to sleep over again? And, you know, all of this stuff. Oh, yeah, of course. I want him to sleep over again. We stay up all night and we eat, you know, junk food and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Another program. Okay. And then I would have let him sleep over. Then I would have had more of a resentment, right? And that would have been dishonest with, you know, myself, dishonest with her. And luckily I didn't do that, but let's just say I did. Let's just say she texted me, say, can he stay another night? And I'm like, ah, okay, fine. That's me being dishonest, because what I really want to say is, no, that doesn't work for me. But what I say instead is, oh, yeah, sure, because I want you to like me. She doesn't, this person is not registering either way, whether she likes me or not. You know what I mean? So, okay. So now you know a lot about me and a lot about the way that my my brain and disease works. Okay. So now what I want us to do, and okay, I'm going to help you guys. Here's another thing. It's, to me, it's very hard. This is a muscle that I didn't have developed for a long time. So for a long time, I didn't even write my parts until I would call my sponsor. And the sponsor would help me figure out what my part was because I couldn't figure it out. And a couple of good questions that I've taken in to try and figure out what my part is and distill it down to those one word and the truth about myself that I'm unwilling to admit. You know, when I look at those options, if my only options are selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, or, you know, there's also another good one that I want to go back to in just a second, and that is making someone else my higher power. That's a big one. And I don't really know where that fits in, but that works, that happens a lot with my bosses, with people I work with. You know, even with my kids, my, you know, it works with any human being and I'm sure dogs too. So if I look at this and I say, what is the truth about myself that I'm unwilling to admit? The truth is I'm dishonest with people. The truth is I have expectations. The truth is I'm controlling. These are not things I really want you guys to know about me. And now you're going to know, and all the people listening to this tape, I'm selfish. I make it all about me. You know, I make people my higher power. I'm a people pleaser. Ugh. But this is why, you know what? I would much rather have it on paper than have it on my body, you know, than wear my resentment on my body in terms of my compulsive eating. Okay. So what we are going to do now, what's my next little note to myself? Okay, that's none. Okay, what we're going to do now is we are going to take some time and you guys are going to go to your worksheet here and you're going to write out a resentment. And we, and some brave soul is going to raise their hand at the end of this, just like I did, and we're going to kind of go through it with you. And even if you can't get to my part, if you're willing to let us help you get to your part, then maybe we can do that together, okay? So what I'd like you to do now, we'll take some time. You can, hey, if you want to do more than one thing, knock yourself out. But, you know, pick a few things if you have a resentment right now and go all the way across. You know, I'm resentful at, you know, and I even want to say, I mean, I'm biting off more than I can chew here probably, but I'm resentful at dad cause he died on me, affects my, you know, stuff like that. I mean, this is pretty petty compared to the big stuff in life, but I'm a petty person. I ate over mostly petty things. I did not eat over the Middle East dispute. You know, I don't eat over, you know, what's going on in world affairs. I eat over Mrs. X called me and wants her kid to sleep over at my house. You know, it's okay.
I was wondering if you could just make a comment about what if you don't really know what your resentments are, like you just kind of go along and there's nothing really bothering you, and but there's probably stuff underneath. Do you have something to say about that?
So for the listener at home, the question was, if you're just going along and you don't really feel like there's any resentments, how do you get at it? Well, that is a really good question. I would maybe ask myself, like, you know, what's bugging me? Or what am I not looking at? What am I unwilling to look at right now? Also, something that I learned was if there was someone walking down the street and I wanted to cross the street to avoid them, that might be someone that I either owe an amends to or have a resentment with.
Yeah. Yeah, and And I was taught that it could be something as minor as an irritation, like that driver cut me off, or that cashier is too slow. It could be just a little irritation.
Yeah.
That we can play this through.
Yeah, thank you. So like a little irritation.
Another thing too, that if you're just not identifying people or even those sort of irritations, but maybe just to start getting your feelings up, you can start writing a list of fears.
Right. Yeah.
One other idea is to start praying to be willing to listen closer to myself, my inner self, because I'm blocking it out. But if I kind of let go to a higher power, that more can be revealed.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was just going to say for myself, it's how did I do with the measuring cup?
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
My abstinence the more today.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my first indicator that something's not right. That's right.
Okay.
As I would say, the cleaner the abstinence, the more I feel.
Oh.
The more I feel things.
Yeah.
The more I'm aware of what's going on.
Right. The cleaner the abstinence, the more I feel, the more I'm aware of what's going on. Yeah.
I have another question, which after we process our resentments.
Yes.
And we tell our story 1,000 times.
Yes.
And everybody knows it by heart. You know, there becomes a glorification of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do to start living in the present moment? Where we know we're controlling, we know who we are really.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do to start living in the present moment? And once we get through this process.
Well, I think what you're asking about is addressed in step 5, which is going through this. Step 6, which is looking at the character defects, which is all these, you know, these are my character defects. Step 7, humbly asks them to be removed. Step 8 and 9, which is, do I owe an amends to Miss X? Do I owe an amend to her kid? Do I owe an amend to my kid? Do I owe an amend to my husband? You know, so I think that's where we start to, and it's also a third step thing. I have to be willing to let go of the story, you know, and I have to turn it over to a higher power. And honestly, I have to keep looking at my part because I can keep going back to the story. But wait a minute, that's a 2-column inventory. This is a 4-column inventory. I'm dishonest. I have expectation. I'm controlling. I'm selfish. I have to remember I have a part in the story.
Yes, but we get stuck in the story and see, and that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing if I have a resentment, say, against my sister, and I cannot spin myself out of the story after I go through 5, 6, 7, 8, how many times has this boundary thing come up, but in different guises? Mm-hmm. I'm a people pleaser. So, of course, when somebody asks me to do something, I'm going to either do it or I'm going to look out to see how can I save this person from herself. That's the other thing I do. So how do we spin ourselves out of that finally in day-to-day living?
Okay. So I think you are asking a great question. I think it is outside the scope of the 4-step inventory. I think that this helps you understand that you're a people pleaser. And then the rest of the steps. So if that's when you go through this inventory and you write your sister and all this kind of stuff, and what you get to at your part is that you are a people pleaser. So I think the rest of the steps address, what do you do with that information? You turn it over to someone else. You are aware of it. You may need to make amends. You may need to make amends to yourself or to someone else. And then, you know, as the steps go on, you take a daily inventory. Step 10 is taking a daily inventory and looking, where did you do it again? Where did you do it again? I would also ask, say at one point, and this is again, this is way down the steps, what are you getting out of being a people pleaser? Yeah. So I think that that's something that when we start to see in step 10, and this is a step 10 tool, when you start to see over and over again that people pleasing is coming up, then it really becomes like what someone else said, praying, you know, in step 11 to have these defects removed. And what am I getting out of this? And ultimately working with others. And I don't think the other would be your sister. I think it's people who actually want and need the service rather than someone that you're so tied into. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to save my family members, but none of them are asking me to sponsor them. The women who call me at 6:50, you know, 8 o'clock, 8:30, and 8:45, they want my time.
Well, I thought you were going to, I
Right, but I think that this, for like I've said, this is about the four-column inventory on as written in the AA Big Book. That is all other stuff that, you know, is between you, your sponsor, your higher power. But I would encourage you to, you know, write out that resentment in this context. See what comes up. Yeah.
Gabrielle?
Yeah. Gabrielle.
Okay, so in writing the cause, I shouldn't include I feel, right? Under the cause section.
I think the cause, I think the I feel, if you can somehow funnel the I feel into what it affects, because give me an example. You feel
that the sister-in-law takes my place when she's around my husband.
Okay, so that would be the cause. My sister-in-law takes, you don't have to even write I feel, because the truth is for you, that's the truth. My sister-in-law takes my place around my husband. And sometimes when we write that, we're like, you know, when I was going through this morning, I'm like, they are going to think I'm so crazy because I'm over this resentment now. But I'm telling you, 2 days ago, it was a real thing. Yeah.
I just to say, when I would do it for step and I would do the I feel part, it would just be sad, mad, just this feeling that it was, rather than a whole long, you know, long sentence or something. But my question is about expectations. How do you know what's a false expectation or a realistic expectation? Like, you know, you get to your part and I have an expectation, but is it right or is it wrong?
Well, I don't know. I just know that most, for me, again, this is my personal experience, I'm one person, expectations lead to resentments. And at one point I said to my, one of my sponsors, like, really, I can't expect to go on a trip with my kids and have a good time? And she goes, I guess not. Like, you might really have to look at that. So I don't know. I mean, that's my experience. Expectations for me are planned resentments. And I'm like, I can't lower my expectations anymore. She goes, I think you can. And I'm like, if I lower my expectations anymore, they're going to be below sea level. She goes, good. Keep going. Nite.
I had an example of one.
Okay. So let me just say, how's everyone doing? Does everyone have something? Do they want to? Yeah. Oh, do you have one, Ms. Pat? Okay. So if everyone has one, let me just check how we're doing on time. Okay, Nite, you raise your hand first. I'm sorry. Okay, so come on up to the mic. Oh, did you sign the disclaimer?
This is one that I've been working on for a very long time. And I usually, what I've really realized since I've been in the program now. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, here we go. What I've really been realizing is I turn a lot of my resentments into comedy routines. And this is one I've been kind of working out. And every time I tell the story, I get upset, even though it happened in 2007. Where one of my dearest friends, I love her so dearly, got married on my birthday. And I was her bridesmaid. Mm. And she has expensive taste, which I do too for things that I want to do, not for things that you want to do. And it was a really huge wedding. And she's an amazing person. And she's like, she always gives the best gifts and everything. But I'm just one of those people, and how I was raised, I'm not going to spend $800 on your wedding. I'm not getting married. And it was like half the bridesmaids were cool with it because that's how they do things. The other half, they were calling me because we're real good friends. Like, girl, how much more do you think she's going to add? We had two dresses. It was two different nights. Hair, makeup. My makeup wasn't even cute. I was just so mad. I was spending all this money, especially on my birthday. And I was like, come on. It's like 365 days a year. You're going to pick this day because that venue is available that day. So what I'm writing, I mean, I was just telling this story the other day. So I'm like, okay, that's really an issue for me. And I get really upset about it. And I'm like, I was in one more wedding after that. And I was like, I got three more weddings left in me for certain people. But I'm like, people's expectations for your participation in their wedding is, I think it's just rude.
It's so rude. And I'm like, $700-$800. That could have been a week vacation for me in Jamaica somewhere, but I'm spending it on two dresses that I have not worn again. I mean, I did everything, but I still think I was dumb for doing everything because that's not what I really wanted to do, was so people pleasing.
Okay. So I'm going to stop you because, so that was,
I need to get that out again.
Yeah. That was great. That was great. And that's great. And don't you feel good? Like,
yes.
Okay. So, but here's the thing. If we just stay there, then we don't kind of get to the point. So we've got BF. We are resentful at best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Cause, wedding, on my birthday.
Yeah, and spent over $700. Yeah,
on B-Day, $700+. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if we can kind of funnel it down or distill it.
Okay.
Down to our choices on the affects my, what would you say those are?
I put definitely my security as far as financial.
Right.
And I had the money at the time, just didn't want it. I wanted to spend it on something else.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Personal relationship, because I did not want to upset her. And, you know, even with half of the bridesmaids, you know, I did call her up like, hey, how much more do you think we're going to, you know, when we were at the $500 mark, how much more do you think we're going to, you know, have to spend? And she was just like, oh, you know, I was reading this magazine and most, you know, one of those brides magazines, of course, most bridesmaids spend $700 to $1,000. Like, you know, that I was like, girl, if you don't.
Okay.
Yeah. Still a story.
Yeah,
sorry.
I know. We love, and you're very funny, and we love this story. And we will all get in there
with
you. It's
so annoying.
But we want
ambitions.
You to get through your resentment. Okay, good.
Yeah, I just feel like I could be spending that and investing it on myself and not on her big day.
Mm-hmm.
Not that much. And, yeah, that's what I put. Money, personal relations, and security. Yeah, that's what I put so far. That's all I had so far. Maybe there's other things that will be revealed.
Okay, I'm just going to, I'm not your sponsor. Do you think it affected your self-esteem? Because it kind of sounds like it.
Let's go with self-esteem.
Okay. Sure. Let's throw it in there. Yeah, come on. You got the mic.
At that time, there were many weddings that were going on. And I was like, wow, another one, more money. Okay. So.
Right. And? Okay. So did you write anything for my part?
Yes.
Okay. What'd you write?
First thing, that I'm selfish. Very selfish because, you know, it was my birthday, but it could be that day is special for a lot of people. And yeah, it's, I mean, I don't own the day. In my world, I do. But in her world, she can do what she wants to do on her day, on that day, on any day, really. I put that I'm controlling because I definitely feel like the way people do weddings that I participate in should be in my way, not their way, even though it was her wedding.
Mm-hmm.
I just got that. Was it the expectations, managing my expectations? I was expecting her to be, for every event, she goes all out and it's going to be a lot of money. And that's just who she is. And why would I expect her to do that differently? That's just who she is. And I was dishonest with myself because I could have chosen to say, hey, I want to be a part. This is how much I can allot for it, which is more like $300. Anything after that, I can't do, but I want to be a part of it. So I have a $300 contribute because $300 makes me feel good. You get a gift too with $300. But $700, you get no gift because I'm the gift. It was $700. That's how I feel like, you know, and yeah. And then I put that people pleasing, definitely. Mm-hmm. Totally a people pleaser. Controlling people pleaser. Yeah. Okay. Those are the ones I put. Yeah.
I think that's great. Okay. I think that's great. And if I wasn't holding two things, I would applaud you right now.
That's all good. That's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing. Yes. Mm. That I totally heard in it was like, number one, dishonesty.
Mm-hmm.
Because exactly what you said, and sometimes we'll say like, well, what do I say to her? What do I say? And it's like, you said it perfectly. You know what? I love you. You're my best friend. $300 is what I can afford. Period. Stop talking. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when we don't do that, it's like a year later and we're in a CEA Hell workshop talking about it. You know?
7 years now.
7 years. I love it.
You seven. Know?
And it takes what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, so now you have this I don't know. You know, we're all here. We're on your side. We don't know her. I would put this one number one.
Totally.
I mean, not that they're in any order.
Totally.
But I don't think, I mean, yeah, selfish. Yeah, you're controlling. Yeah, you have expectations. But the biggest thing was, I bet if you had said to her, as all this stuff was rolling in, if you had said to her, hey, listen, it seems like we have a lot of activities going on here. Like, I can only afford $300 to spend on this wedding. Period. Yeah, and then just wait to see what happens.
I'll be fearful she would reject me, to be honest, or be very disappointed.
Of course.
I was just talking with her last week, and she was mad that a friend of her, the wife of a friend of hers, didn't come to her baby's first birthday because they wanted to take their child to a swim lesson. And I was like, well, now that I'm in program, I said, well, she's allowed to have her experience. That swim lesson might be important for whatever reason we don't know. And you don't even really care for her like that. So why did you care if she came to your daughter's first birthday? And you don't even care, like, I was able to articulate that, but then it wasn't about me either. So,
well, you know what's interesting? So here's a great thing that a wise woman once said to me. When we don't people please, people aren't pleased. And what happens? Has the earth imploded? I haven't people pleased as much as I used to. The earth is still spinning. We are here. We are breathing oxygen. Those people have gone on. They have forgiven me for not doing what they wanted in the moment they wanted it, you know? And I got to, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, babe.
Thank you. Thank you.
When we don't people please, people aren't pleased. And then it's like dot, dot, dot. Really nothing. They go off and they can, you know, they can do whatever. But the truth is, I walk away and I have to deal with that feeling of like, oh, they're not happy with me. And I would say I will be honest, that is one of my big things that I'm dealing with right now. And I think to myself, how old are you going to have to get, Gabrielle, to stop caring what people think about you? You know? Yeah.
I don't have an example, but I wanted to say something I learned was from a sponsor is that today I am a God pleaser, not a people pleaser. Mm. And by God pleaser, I'm honoring what my truth is, no matter what the occasion is. And the other thing I wanted to bring up with I thought that was fabulous. Thank you so much for doing that. With self-esteem, I saw, because I was taught when I do this to really push it and exaggerate it. So self-esteem, how dare she schedule her wedding on my birthday? Doesn't she know who I am?
Right, that's great.
Right, and then for dishonesty, expecting her friend to be different than she knows that she is. So that's another part of dishonesty. Like,
yeah.
Expecting the situation to be different, not accepting reality as it is.
Right.
That's part of that, so.
Yeah. Thank you.
Make sure you sign the release.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That was great, Nate. Thank you. Does anyone else want to? Oh, Pat. Okay, come on. Take the mic, lady.
You've heard it already, so anyway. I have to say my name. My name is Pat, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Pat.
Hi. This is one. Gabrielle is my sponsor. But it's one I've been talking about. And see, I don't know if I want to talk about this. My sister.
My little. Okay, okay. She's getting a little.
My sister. When I have a sister that I'm resentful with. She's my half-sister. My dad just died. I've been talking about this, but for whatever reason, I still can't seem to get rid of it. The thing is that my dad was sick and he was staying with her. You know what I mean? When he went to the hospital, whatever, she never called me. When my dad died, she texted me to tell me that he was dead. You know, so I call her. She doesn't return any of my calls. You know, and then when I did finally get a hold of her, I asked her, have I done anything wrong? Have I affected you in any kind of way? She told me no. You know what I mean? So I'm just trying to understand. It's like, you know, why? You know, I let her know that I love her and I'm there for her. But the fact is, these things are still there, you know. And matter of fact, we just had a family reunion this past weekend and she was there. And I told her, so what's going on? It's like, you know, you never returned any of my calls. She said, I haven't returned anyone's calls. You know, and what that is, it definitely affects my self-esteem, my relationship with her, you know. And it's just really hard that I'm holding on to this. And what it is, I guess, too, and my part, I guess I'm being selfish, because why I say that is because I realize that for her, she lost her dad and her mother. Her mother died before my father did. You know, my dad had remarried, and it was her, and her mother died. So she lost both her parents. So what I get is that I need, she has to grieve in all the way that she know how, but the fact is that I'm feeling that, you know, feeling left out, that I'm, you know, not a part of her life, and I want to be, you know, and it hurts, you know. So basically, this, I have no more to say than that.
Yeah.
So
thank you. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, okay? But you can sit down if you want. So I'm going to ask you, so do you think this would be about right, that it affects your self-esteem? It affects your personal relations, because she's a person and you have a relationship with her. Would you also maybe say that it affects your security? Because this is about your family cohesion, and you just lost a big member of your family. Okay. And do you think it affects, this might be no, do you think it affects your ambitions, like the future going forward? Or do you think that would fall more under personal relations? Okay. So I think you were really great at helping us. I'm going to use the wrong word, at making an excuse for her. But that's not our job. Our job is to figure out what your part is. So what is the truth about yourself that you're unwilling to admit? Where were you to blame? Okay, so if I was your sponsor, and I am, I would say you had an expectation. And like what someone said in the back, is it a realistic expectation that when your father is dying, that your sibling will call you? Yes. Are some of our siblings totally messed up? Yes. Mine is. You know? And so, and this is a thing that I have certainly had to grapple with in my own life. Like, why wouldn't he want to be a part of my life? I'm awesome. You know? It's like, why? We have kids the same age. Like, why does he call me back? I have an expectation. He's got his own thing going on. You know, you said something else that I thought of while you were talking. And it went out of my mind. It's lost. But I would say, you know, it's like I have an expectation that this person was supposed to act a certain way. I can't figure out why she didn't text me. Well, you know what? And I don't know if you're ever going to get that answer, you know, except that I called you, and you didn't call me back. Well, I didn't call anyone back? That's your answer. That's not a great answer. That's not a fulfilling answer to fill the hole of my dad died and you texted me. So I think it's also, here's another thing. And this is one of those fuzzy things that lies outside the bullet points that the big book gives us, but lack of acceptance, you know? And I think it's like, this is a hard situation all the way around. Dad died and sibling did not show up the way I wanted her to. And I can't get over it, you know? And here's another thing that someone taught me one time too. Lack of faith and trust in God. That this is working out exactly how it's supposed to. It might not feel good. It's certainly not the way I want it to work out. But if I did a first, second, and third step where I turn my life and my will over to the care of God, then I need to trust that everything is in perfect order, you know? And you know, and I'll tell you a little quick story that somebody told me. She was newly in the program, and she immediately hooked up with a great guy, drug addict, and he didn't stay sober. And she was doing all this work, and she really just couldn't understand like why he couldn't stay sober, and why he was always going out, and he'd come for the booty call and then he'd leave and blah, 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 blah. And she said to the therapist, "I just want it to work out." And the therapist said, "It is working out. This is how it's working out." And it's hard that this is how it's working out. And so it's like, what do we have to do? And of this woman, you know, I have a lack of acceptance that this is a hard, sad situation and it didn't get any better with her actions. And I have a lack of faith and trust in God that this is how it's supposed to be. You know, God's will is what's happening. This is it. So, huh? You keep continuing to pay for her. Oh, pray. Yes. Yes. And that's so, which is a great segue. Thank you, Pat. So, and I wish that lady was still here when she said, well, what if we can't get over it? What if we can't get over it? So someone also taught me, I'm still mad. What can I do? And there is an add-on column that is nowhere in the big book that somebody made up. Maybe she just made it up for me. Where have I done the same? And what that helps me with is it helps me gain compassion for the person. Because what we read and what someone said is that we are sick. They are sick people. This was our course. We realized that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." So that's one of those things of, you know, where have I done the same? And maybe it's not as something as severe as this, but where have I not called someone back? Where have I gotten distracted? Where have I not been able to talk to the people in my family for whatever reason? We have like 15 more minutes.
Of rejection and how quickly I can go to self-pity. And so all of those things are really helpful.
Yeah, self-pity would be a good one to go into the my part, you know, and then this is what kind of I like about the big book, how it gives us, it helps me get specific. Like, so when I think of self-pity, then I think, well, what is that? That's selfish. Because I'm thinking about myself. I'm making it all about me, you know? Thank you. Yeah.
I have a question.
Oh.
Just a little thing to the end of that was, you know, when someone dies, I can feel sorry for myself, but I can also give myself compassion. I can pray for the other person if I've been wrong, but I need to remember to pray for me.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that that's a big thing that, you know, whoever it does a workshop on step 8 and 9, a lot of people, what they do is when they make a list of, you know, people that they may owe amends to, which comes out of, you know, the 4-column inventory, it's a lot of people say, put yourself at the top of that amends list, you know? So you had your hand up. It's on page, it's at the bottom of page 66, going into page 67, starting with "This was our course." That's about the people who are spiritually sick. Yeah.
I just wanted to say for Pat, but for all of us, we have an expectation. We'll pray for something or for somebody, and we expect that God's going to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Be careful what you wish for. Or that, like what it talks about in our literature, where we don't pray for specific things because who are, you know, that's a good point. Thank you. Okay. I know you wanted to.
Why do we are supposed to stand there?
Yeah, come on up, lady. I feel like we're at a game show.
Right. I'm the next contestant. My name is Carmen. I was just going to...
Hi, Carmen.
One thing that my sponsor really helped me with was on this four-column inventory, which I kind of, after I finished doing my big 170,000 questions or whatever it was, I'm just kind of starting it over and doing it this way.
Uh-huh.
Because I just was, yes, no, doesn't apply to me, you know. And,
right.
And, you know, wrote out some good things. But one thing about in the... my part
mm-hmm.
that my sponsor really helped me a lot, because when I was doing my part, I kept going back to the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so she was like, hey, in this column, there's no whining. There's no story. It's just about what you did. And I was just like, oh, it still kills me.
I know.
Because I just want to go back to the story.
Right. But it's that thing of where am I to blame? Right. I was.
I just wanted to go back to the story
every time so and how the I felt. So good.
Yeah. But my question is as a sponsor, how do you think the best way to handle this, you know, this, I guess, fifth step, you know, when your sponsee calls you with this, you know, how do you have good boundaries? Because it can, I have a hard time with listening to too much spewing.
Right.
And so I don't really know where a good boundary. So that's my question is, as a sponsor, how do we, what's the best way to handle that when they are calling us with the story?
I think it's a great question. And I think a few things, and I think that's exactly what happened to me all those years ago. She was done listening to the story. And I think that, you know, someone said, so this gal that I know who has 51 years of sobriety, and she said, I love you too much not to be honest with you. Also, we're lucky that we usually only talk for 10 to 15 minutes, you know, and we should be talking about our food and our question of the day. But yeah, of course, we, you know, people go on and on and on. And you can say, hey, listen, I really want to help you get through this. Can you write it all down? And sometimes I say, can you write it out and call me later? Or sometimes I'll say, it sounds like you have a resentment. Can you do a four column inventory and then call me back later and we'll talk about your part? Because
when they're telling the story, sorry, but when they're telling the story, do you kind of like stop them at some point and go, okay.
I think you can kindly say, hey, listen, I don't want to take up all of our call time on this. I really want to help you get to the solution. Because, and there's always funny little quippy things like, there's a chapter in the big book. It's called There Is a Solution. It's not called There Is a Story or, you know, or Mrs. X wants her kid to come over to your house. There's no, you know, there's also, it's not called Into Whining. It's called Into Action. You know, it's also, it's not called Into Telling Another Story. It's called Into Action, you know, and how it works, you know, not how to whine. So it's like, you know, I think that we can be humorous with that. And we can also, and we know that, I know for me, it's like when I let it go on and on and on, then I'm people pleasing. And it's like, I get off that 15 minute phone call and I'm like, oh, you know, and I feel like I just got, you know, like I just got slimed. But when I say, hey, listen, it sounds like you have a resentment. The way that I've been taught to deal with resentments is let's do a four column inventory. Why don't you bang that out and then call me back? And then, and you know, you're going to have to hear that. And when you start to hear that cycle go back around, you can go, okay, I got it. Is there any more to the cause? And I'm a bullet points person. That's how I tend to write anyway. So I have had to say to people, can you give me the bullet points? So I think that, you know, and it helps us weigh and measure our resentment. It helps us keep it on the plate. You know what I mean? It's like, I think that's such a big thing. Like my disease was such a thing where there was just like, it was so, there were no boundaries with my food. There was opening and closing the refrigerator door. I never ate a meal. And so likewise, my resentments and my behavior were all over the place. And boy, I could tell you a story. I could tell you how it affects me. It always went back to my mom and dad. It's like, whoa, this isn't psychotherapy. This is a four column inventory, you know? And so it's like, this stuff helps me get to, like, when I'm forced to put it in those, like, four words, woo, you know, it's like, 4 ounces. Now we know what 4 ounces looks like. Now I know I can pretty much, you know, stuff everything into, you know, dishonest, selfish, self-seeking, frightened, you know, expectation, people-pleasing. Those are pretty much like my go-tos. So, but that's a great question. Thank you. Yeah.
So really, my part helps me set up boundaries and sends me to the learning curve.
Can you say that into the mic? Because that was great.
So really, at the completion of this, my part teaches me how to set up boundaries and go on to my recovery.
Yes. And I think the big takeaway we get from my part is those are my character defects. So yeah, it names what I'm doing, and it helps me, hopefully, like once we name it, then once I name, like, I'm a people pleaser, I'm dishonest, then I know the next time that person calls or I have a conversation or I have to see them or we have, you know, whatever, we have interaction, I know going in, my go-to is that I'm a people pleaser with this person. Like, I have to pause. Like, I have to watch myself because I don't want to people please because I end up feeling yucky. So, yeah, you're right. It really teaches us boundaries. Hi.
Hi, I'm CJ.
Hi, CJ.
Hi. Just in what we were just talking about and what we're talking about with this one. Oh, sorry. Oh, I can get up and talk to the microphone, whatever you want.
I'm happy to get up. Hey. I guess what I was thinking is the two things you just wrote over there was, hold on, let me grab my notebook. What were the two?
It was lack of acceptance.
Yeah.
And
lack of faith and trust in God.
Right. Lack of faith and trust in God and lack of acceptance. Thank you so much, because I think that is such a big part. And it's so funny. I've been talking to my sponsor, like, I've done the four columns. So I'm doing the four columns again. So I'm so glad I was able to get in here toward the end of this. But boundaries are so important, especially with all of this too. At least that's what I'm coming to believe, is like really everything is about boundaries for me. Being able to say, just even like the sponsor call, and I am that sponsee that just spews negative, bile, black tar at my sponsor. And the thing she teaches me, she takes really good care of herself and it helps me with other sponsees. And the thing she says is, and that's what I was meaning, like acceptance that this is how the sponsee is right now. And trusting God that they're going to get what they need, whether you can give it to them or not. They're going to get it somewhere. And my sponsor, the best thing she says to me, and I say it to everyone, is she goes, I really don't know what to say. Call three other people and ask them about it.
Mm.
That is the greatest sponsoring tool on the planet, is call three other people. And if I have someone in mind that has a similar, you know, thing, to call them. But it really teaches me as a sponsee, like she said to me once, like, I can't do battle with your illness. Like, cause I just kept repeating the same thing. Yeah. But you know, like you're stuck in the story. Like, I want to tell the story. It's so amazing the way I tell it too.
Right.
Well, you know, right. And so I guess just as far as like, thank you so much for that. And that same thing for the four column is like, when I'm working with other people or talking to a sponsee or even my sponsor, sometimes I have to get off the phone and like do a quick four column. Like, why am I suddenly pissed now that I just got off the phone with that person? And then I have to just accept that that is how it was and then just let it go to God and then move on with my day. Because like even driving here, I was like a little late and I'm like, okay, I got it. And I'm like already ahead where someone's yelling at me that I was late, you know, and I was like, just drive here, just enjoy. Is there a pretty song you can listen to? So I turned off the radio, prayed, listened to a pretty song, and I was here and no one cared. But I get so stuck up in my head in, you know, the future and stuff. And the same with these like four columns is for me to be able to let go of all of my preconceived thoughts and notions and just really be open to what I'm able to receive, and to also admit that I may not be able to admit certain things about myself yet, but that's like they talk about layers of the onion or the thing. It's just that I'm able to, like, by doing the steps once, sweep away the top layer of dirt, and now I can start sweeping like the next layer and the next layer. And then there's things I will be able to admit when I can, because it's embarrassing how messed up I am. The stuff I've done is embarrassing.
You missed me going through the resentment. My own resentment.
I was so bummed.
It was pretty embarrassing.
Literature commitment, but I really wanted, this is like my favorite one I wanted to be on. So anyway, thank you. That's all.
Thanks, CJ. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lisa. Ooh, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Sorry.
Hi, I'm Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
And compulsive eater, and thank you so much for your sharing on this topic. I know for me, I love
to keep studying the problem and focusing on it and twirling it around and looking at it. And, you know, what I've heard is Bill W. said, you know, the answer's in the answer. And, you know, I want the answer in the problem because right. I can focus on him or them or whatever. And then what it really does is allows me not to take responsibility for myself.
Yeah.
Because then I don't have to look at myself. And so I can just keep focusing on that out there. And if I'm having trouble really getting to the answer, which is my part and the spiritual answer, I know sometimes what it means is I have to go back to step three, you know, and just trust that God is. And if I'm having trouble with any step, I may need to go to the step before. And this is a case where if four, I'm having a problem with four, I may go back to three. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's you made a great point. Thank you, Lisa. And I've heard that too, that if I can't, if I'm having a problem with the step that I'm on, I need to go to the step before, and I might not have done enough, you know, work there. I haven't formed the basis to move on to the next thing. Okay, so we have 4 minutes left, and you know, and okay, hi. Okay.
I'm sorry to be the perfect,
yes.
You make sure that you sign the release.
Yes. Everybody needs to sign a release who speaks on the mic.
My name is Lupe, compulsive eater.
Hi, Lupe.
I put here, resentful at some ladies that crossed my path yesterday and today. Other cause. They did not care to carry a conversation. Affected my personal relationships.
Okay.
Relations. And then I put my part.
Do you think it also affected your self-esteem?
Yes.
Did it affect your security? Because what's going to happen for the
future? I just put my conversation. Didn't it not carry my conversation? So.
Okay.
What was that? Did you say?
I asked you, do you think it affected your security?
Security?
Because oh, I'm going to see them all weekend, and what am I going to do next? You know, the future.
Or is it my English that I'm not speaking well?
Okay. Right. Okay. Yep, I'm with you. Okay.
Okay, and then my part I wrote this up. Not sure my part. God helped me to see what was my part. You know me much better than I do. I expected more from them. Expectation.
It's great. Isn't that great? How, yes. What a lot of people said, sometimes if we just pray, the word will come in there, you know? Thank you. That was great. That was a great example of, like, when we go through the process. And most of the time I start out, I don't know what my part is. And then it's like, once I start talking, you know, that one word, and that's why we do this together. You know, we don't do this alone. We do it, you know, with a sponsor or a trusted friend in the program. That's the fifth step, so that someone can get us talking and get us out of the story and then help you kind of distill it down to some of those words. Thank you. Yes. Oh, good. Did you sign the release form? No, I'm kidding.
Where is it? Mary Beth, food addict. Hey, and I just wanted to add that my sponsor has also shared with me another column to add at the end, and that is, what action do I need to take? So do I need to make amends? Do I need to pray? Do I need to whatever? So that's really helpful to me.
That's great. Thank
you.
Where
is that sign? Where is that paper?
And I think someone, what? Yeah. Maybe, but I think it's like moving in that, you know, moving that direction. I think a lot of that's like kind of, you know, that person that helped me with the, you know, with the thing of like, where have I done the same? Like, a lot of people have like their own, you know, twist on it. I know you, did you want to say something sure. real quick, and then yeah. we'll close?
This is just kind of convention business, which is, you found a survey in your packet. Before you leave, there's a box on where you got your packet. There's a box where you can leave your completed survey of the weekend. And if you don't get a chance to do that, you can go on SurveyMonkey and also take care of it there. And we'll be sending you an email.
Okay. Thanks, Linda. So let's just close. I thank you all for being so honest, open, and willing. And thank you for sharing your stuff. And I would just ask that we remember that, you know, it's an anonymous program, and that, you know, what we see here, you know, stays in this room, that we keep this confidential. Let's close with the Serenity Prayer. Okay. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, so good.